Chapter 10. Tony awoke to a pain in his skull that felt like a clamp, and an anxiety in his heart and guts that made him feel as if they were being held by somebody malicious, somebody intent on torturing him. Images flashed through his mind of Marshall choking in an inflamed barracks, of Pickett leering from behind his desk, of the massive figure of Orlando looming in the doorway like some grim reaper, inducted into the military, of Kaz walking alone into the woods, of Clemson's staring dead eyes, and, finally, a vision of himself at the bottom of Clemson's well as dirt poured down. As the soil rained down, he thrashed, his arms splaying out, trying to bat away the dirt, and then, as it filled up to his shoulders, climb his way out of it. He felt himself gaining, fighting higher, when another grip-like sensation descended over his shoulders.
"Hold him down! Keep him still! Stop him moving, dammit!"
he heard, cutting through the fog of his thought as the grip on his shoulders tightened all the more. Suddenly, the nightmare of descending dirt gave way, and Tony found himself in a room, dimly lit by red lights, staring straight up into the face of Orlando, as he shoved him hard into the back of what must have been a booth. Now cognizant of where this was headed, of what lay in store for him if he resisted, Tony fell slack, stopped fighting, let Orlando feel the fight go out of him. Once Orlando was satisfied, he turned his head over his shoulder towards Pickett, as if asking for approval. From where he sat on the other side of the booth, across a spread of dishes, Tony could tell at a glance were wildly expensive and beautifully made up. Pickett nodded, the last vestiges of a frown giving way to his trademark unctuous smile. Not that Tony had any illusion the man had left. No doubt he was standing somewhere nearby, keeping close watch to make sure that Tony made no false moves and that Pickett stayed in his lane. Despite the way Pickett barked orders, Tony had little doubt that he was only here on Orlando's good graces, and not, as it might seem, the other way around. Yet, if that were the case, Pickett did not let it show on his face that he felt nervous or monitored. Instead, he pushed a plate of what looked like fried cauliflower across the table, motioning for Tony to have some.
"Please, Mr. Rodriguez, have a bite. You've been through the ringer, and I'd hate to have you collapsing on me mid-conversation. There's so much we have to discuss, and I'd hate for you to miss the best of what the rabbit hole has to serve after taking the trouble to bring you here. There are fancier restaurants in town, yes, but for all my money, there's nothing to beat what the chefs here get up to. I trust you'll agree."
But Tony could hardly bear to look at the cauliflower, or any of the other plates before him. The ossobuco, the duck wings, the short ribs that Pickett had ordered for him. It wasn't just the stabbing pain at the nape of his neck, or the throb in his head, or the lingering pain from where Orlando had gripped his shoulders. That Pickett could expect Tony to forget that he had ordered the murder of an innocent man, and had Tony kidnapped, or to at least act like it, made his blood boil and his bile rise. "You'll forgive me, Colonel, if I'm not exactly interested in breaking bread with a murderer." He immediately regretted his words, the precarity of his situation made even the mildest of inflammatory comments more costly than Tony could afford, but also felt a small thrill at hearing them. His unerring dedication to negotiation and order and reason meant that Tony so rarely allowed himself a chance to speak what he felt acutely in his heart.
"Oh, please, there's no need for melodrama, or to stand on ceremony here, Tony. I didn't waste Orlando's day, having him trail you, just so I could spend the evening watching you soak over cooling food, or so that I could sit here and listen to your recriminations. I wanted you here so that we might negotiate."
Tony's first instinct was to spit back, "Negotiate this," and grab Pickett by the collar, to fight Pickett's glib demeanor with his righteous anger. But before he could shoot back with another insult, he collected himself, began to reorder his interests and priorities. Pickett had kept him alive for a reason, after all. It would have been the easiest thing in the world for Orlando and his goons to have plugged him in the back of the head as he was climbing out of the well, or to have ganged up on him the minute he emerged, but they hadn't. Evidently, Orlando, and at least one of his squad mates, had been doing something while Tony was down in the well, something that necessitated being away, long enough for Tony to get the drop on one of the men. Somebody, he figured, had been searching his car while he was distracted, and not finding what they needed, escorted him here. Finding his center, Tony replied, "Hell of a way to negotiate, Pickett, knocking a man out and dragging him out to... where are we, exactly?" Pickett extended one free hand in a sweeping gesture he must have fancied conveyed generosity, magnanimity, as it indicated not just the swank decor of their surroundings, but the food before them as well.
"My very own private room at the Rabbit Hole, as it turns out. Just a little perk of being well-known around town, you know. A place to bring the VIPs and entertain them when they come to visit. See how their investments are proceeding."
Tony wondered if the mention of VIPs was an oblique reference to Pickett's own benefactors, if the line about investments was deliberate bait to get him thinking about their plot and reveal his hand by talking too much. Not that Tony had quite pieced together what, exactly, it was they were planning. If all they wanted was control of water, there were plenty of legal channels they could follow that would yield more water faster, and centralized supplies of it at that. Tony never had a kind thing to say about the oligarchs and petty tyrants and corporate overlords who'd legislated and bought their way into controlling water on a global scale, even after decades in the military had taught him there was little black and white in the world. He still considered those who would hoard water unambiguously evil. But what made them so dangerous was that everything they did was, if not legally unimpeachable, then at least legally defensible. But that understanding only made Pickett and his associates more terrifying. If whatever they were doing with these vast quantities of water required them to do so illegally, then Tony himself couldn't yet guess to what end these resources were being channeled. Deciding to take a less direct tack, Tony played the fool. "Funny, but I'd think you'd want to take the top brass to the Academy cafeteria, if you were really interested in showing them how things had changed." Chortling, Pickett picked up his wine glass by the stem and toasted Tony.
Fair game, Tony, no. But I've always felt faintly embarrassed showing our visitors around the cafeteria. It's no fault of my own, I hope you understand, that the food is what it is. I'm not responsible for everything that happens on Academy grounds, not even, despite your paranoid fantasies, the death of Cadet DeRay.
For a moment, his face lost some of the flippant self-satisfaction that irked Tony so much, replaced by a look of rigid seriousness that suggested he did take this seriously, at least on some level. Tony saw the bait for what it was, though, an attempt to get him to confess how much he already knew, and dodged. "But I've never said anything about Marshall's passing, Colonel. Nothing except that it was an unavoidable tragedy. Are you suggesting that it wasn't unavoidable? That something could have stopped it?" Pickett tisked at Tony's evasion.
"Come, Tony, this kind of petty gamesmanship is beneath us. There's no need to beat around the bush like this, denying what you were doing out at Clemson's farm. I'm sure you think you've stumbled onto something truly heinous afoot, but as it stands, I think we have more to gain from cooperation than from conflict. You and Orlando's encounter was nothing but the product of misunderstanding."
"You'll forgive me, but anything that results in murder and kidnapping is hardly what I would call a misunderstanding. Seems to me, any of the people that attacked me might have simply bothered to ask me a question, or announce themselves in the first place, instead of ambushing me from the shadows. If his words were a bit more barbed than he had intended, Tony didn't regret it. Much as Tony wanted Pickett to underestimate him, he also knew that Pickett wouldn't buy it if he played a complete fool. He likely considered Tony something of a dupe, yes, but nobody on the planet could have gone through what he had on Clemson's farm and not realize that something was horribly, horribly awry. To play the idiot in this case would likely have suggested Tony knew even more than he had let on. Still, he couldn't help but wonder how Orlando and his goon squad had tracked him out to Clemson's farm in the first place. Had he missed something at Saigon? Or had Orlando started trailing him even earlier, maybe after he left the base with Kaz? He shuddered to think that the image of Kaz walking into the mountains might have been the last he'd ever see of the man, and that he had been picked off only seconds later. It was as if Pickett sensed the exact origin of his discomfort, because he immediately chimed in to undercut them.
"Please, Tony, you're not like your friend, Mr. Miller."
Tony perked up, horrified, unable to stop the fear and concern showing on his face. "What do you mean?" Pickett shook his head, tisking all the while.
"Oh, don't worry yourself about the sergeant, Tony. We haven't even touched him. Why, if we're lucky, he doesn't even know he's being watched at this moment. All I meant to say is that, unlike him, I felt no compunction about sending my men to you for a discussion. I knew you wouldn't overreact, that you're a man of dialogue and thought, not reckless action. Unfortunately, I miscalculated with regards to my own men, who seemed to think the only way you would come is if they apprehended you. You know how ex-military mercenaries can be, Tony. They were taught for so long that the only tool they need is a hammer, that they begin to see every problem as a nail to be beaten down."
Tony wanted to scoff at that. He had problems with the way the military was run, absolutely, but he was never one to dismiss his brothers and sisters in arms as unthinking brutes. He'd served with hundreds of smart, dedicated, brave soldiers who would never jump to immediate, unquestioning violence, and despised seeing officers like Pickett write off the supposed rank and file as nothing but brutes. "In my experience, Colonel, that approach is less a problem of the individual and more an indictment of the commanding officer. Should I take it that you were the one responsible for their trigger-happy approach to resolution?" Pickett shook his head.
"I only instructed Orlando to bring you in so we might have a chat, Tony. How he approaches conflicts in the field falls to his best judgment. I suppose you might be able to place the blame for unruly subordinates on my shoulders, true, but can you blame me if I sent off an over-eager watchdog when you've stolen something of great importance to me? Play the victim all you like, Tony, but I'm not the one playing hide-and-go-seek with your property. Let's not pretend that you wouldn't be doing the same yourself if you were in the same position."
"Your property? I'm sorry, Colonel, but I have no idea what you're talking about."
"No, it doesn't ring any bells when I mention a pair of ledgers that were front and center on my desk this afternoon, that just so happened to vanish between the time I left the office and the time I returned to find you and Sergeant Miller on your way out. Because before you assure me that you know nothing about the ledgers I'm talking of, Tony, I need to assure you that any attempts you make to dodge the question are only going to endanger the people you're looking out for. I've torn my office up all day, inside out and upside down, simply looking for papers I needed for my work, only to find nothing. Surely you can understand why I suspect you, to say nothing of your impromptu trip out to a farm in the middle of nowhere this afternoon. Need I ask you what you were doing interrogating innocent farmers during your supposed morning trip, Tony? Will the Independent or some other such rag not be curious at all about why a phone call and a visit from an officer who came halfway around the world in the middle of the night for a cadet's funeral presaged the death of some poverty-stricken cattle farmer, hmm?
What are you insinuating, Pickett? Tony didn't like the circling nature of Pickett's threats, the allusion to real harm that made every threat seem somehow equally possible, but in all this circling around, he realized quite clearly that Pickett truly did have no interest in killing Tony, and likely knew that Tony, too, knew it. That gave Tony the upper hand to some extent. The smile that unfolded across Pickett's lips, like a fat, content cat stretching itself in a sunbeam, as he listened to Tony's questions, confirmed all Tony needed to know. It was a smile lacking for confidence, brimming with faux bravado, an overcompensation meant to disguise obvious shortcomings.
Only that your behavior was so very, very suspicious that I believe I was justified in sending my men to follow you. What else would a colonel think when he finds a man who should be halfway around the world has shown up overnight for the funeral of a departed cadet he was close to, only to abscond with key documents, documents related to the exact incident that brought him here in the first place, only to then, hours later, converse with a journalist for one of the newspapers covering said incident, only to then disappear to an obscure farm whose owner and dogs end up dead? I'm simply saying, Tony, that anybody researching this would find your behavior odd, to say the least. It would not take Sherlock Holmes to crack this case.
Holmes might not have too much trouble cracking the case, no, but I do think he'd have some trouble understanding why exactly it is you're threatening me over a pair of ledgers. No, what I wanted to know is why you're being so coy about this. If you know that I have your documents, shouldn't that be enough to indict me? Why are you coming to me with this, instead of reporting it to the proper authorities on base? Unless, of course, you're afraid of internal affairs bringing up something that you'd rather go unnoticed? It was possible he was overplaying his hand, Tony knew, but he couldn't be defensive forever, lest he end up permanently on the back foot, reacting instead of setting the pace himself. For all of the colonel's equivocation and manipulation, it was clear that he was circling around a truth he did not want touched upon, not here, not within earshot of Orlando. If he simply wanted the documents, all he had to do was threaten Tony's friends more directly. Given what he'd seen earlier between Pickett and Orlando, the way Pickett seemed to be at Orlando's mercy and not the other way around, he was likely avoiding this for some reason that would prove instrumental to his own, not to mention Kaz's and Lisa's, survival. The smile that Pickett had so relished a second ago curled down from his lips into a disappointed frown. With a sigh, he brought his glass of wine to his lips, indulged a long gulp, then placed it back down with an almost dainty air of disappointment.
"I'm a busy man, Tony. Not at all thrilled to be wasting the Friday night at the end of a very, very long week, throwing little jabs at you while you duck and weave. You may think that we're sparring here now, but let me restate myself. This is not a game. I don't have to be here doing this, not if I don't want to. But I've always been an admirer of your work, Tony, as a thinker and as an engineer. It's always felt like a shame that you've languished at the lower levels, being shuffled around the world to help advise and fix up the projects and mistakes of others. What I'm offering you is one last chance to correct your course and find that advancement you've always been suited for. What I am offering you, in effect, is a chance to be on the winning side.
Interesting, but I've never been offered a job that came stapled to a threat. Doesn't sound like much of a winning side if they have to press gang people into working for them.
Is it what you call press ganging if I'm only asking you to do it for friends? To make sure that the sergeant or that contact of yours at the Independent don't end up dead? So far as I see it, it's no different from an employer offering a destitute father a promotion to ensure that his wife and children don't end up starving, or a dutiful child with aging parents that need taken care of in ways that his current position simply does not provide for. You wouldn't call such economic necessity press ganging, would you, Tony? I wouldn't think so.
Pickett's smile returned, but this time there was none of the warmth or good humor Tony had sensed earlier. This one was more reptilian, cruel, and shrewd, and part of a process of pragmatic calculation, devoid of even the ability for feigned warmth. The way Pickett was eyeing Tony now, he felt as if he was being sized up by a snake, wondering if it could fit this new animal of strange shape and strange size in its belly. Wondering if it maybe shouldn't at least try to devour this thing before it, because the risk of it running around were greater than the risks in choking it down. I don't know, Colonel, but it seems to me like there's no reason to doubt the safety of either the sergeant or of my journalist contact, not unless you're insinuating something that certain authorities might find interesting. Because I sincerely doubt the death of a beloved staff member of the Academy, the same week as a catastrophic fire and a PR disaster, would go overlooked, or that the disappearance of a vital member of one of the same newspapers investigating your botched practices wouldn't raise some eyebrows. Despite his bravado, Tony realized he was pushing his luck to the breaking point.